The Week in Philly on KYW News Radio is recorded and edited every Friday afternoon. For the latest updates to any of the stories you're about to hear, listen to KYW News Radio anytime on your smart speaker or the Odyssey or iHeartRadio apps. Visit KYWNewsRadio.com or follow us on social media at KYW News Radio.
This is The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio. Sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
Welcome to our weekly look at the stories that have been making headlines in Philadelphia and the region. My name is Matt Leon, and over the next hour, we will bring in KYW News Radio reporters to break down the stories you have been talking about. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court with an extraordinary ruling against the office of Philadelphia DA Larry Krasner.
I think nobody was expecting what the Supreme Court did.
Kristen Johansson will have that story. Then Pat Lowe brings us the latest development in the fight to tell the story of the President's House.
That clears the way for the Interior Department to replace the exhibit.
Charges against teens arrested during an anti-ICE protest in Quakertown back in February have been dropped.
There just wasn't enough evidence to support assault charges.
Vic Ragyapathy will have the details. It was chaos Tuesday at a Wilmington hospital.
One of the victims ended up dying and the other survived.
Tim Jimenez will tell us what happened. Then Mike DiNardo talks about SEPTA looking to develop land in Germantown.
Among the possibilities are ground floor commercial space with apartments above.
And then we hear from Justin Udo about how some World Cup fans learned about the Rocky curse.
They have placed one of their traditional soups and a beer at the feet of Rocky in hopes to make amends.
All that is ahead over the next hour. I hope you'll join us for The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio, and we will get started right after this.
We know where we are. We are in the fight. And once we get past the fight, we all win.
We start this edition of The Week in Philly with a stunning announcement we got this week out of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court dealing with Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner. And for more on this, let's bring in KYW Crime and Justice reporter Kristen Johansson, who broke this story. Kristen, what did the Supreme Court say?
They use what's known as a King's Bench, which kind of is a mechanism for them to tell any kind of judicial power that they must do something. It's a way to direct them. And so in this case, there was a King's Bench direction, essentially, saying that the district attorney now has to have the Office of Attorney General in Pennsylvania basically look over their work before the DAO decides to overturn a conviction. They actually direct the judges, because that's who they can direct. So they direct the judges to call in essentially the AG and say, would you agree with whether or not this conviction should be overturned? And they have to then have a duty to go over the record, understand it, read the testimony, see if anything's been missing, and see whether or not A, possibly that this really should be overturned, or B, that it shouldn't be. And Sunday is a Republican and Krasner is a Democrat. So I don't see the two of them getting along and agreeing on much, but that's to be seen.
So what triggered this ruling?
So this goes back to a case that happened in the early 2000s. There was a man who was convicted of murder and sentenced to death in two murders, I should say, in the early 2000s. And one of the victim's families kind of going to the Supreme Court and saying that this conviction should not be overturned. I actually listened to these arguments back when they happened. It was March of last year. Although I was expecting some sort of ruling sometime soon, I think nobody was expecting what the Supreme Court did, directing basically another prosecutor's office to essentially check the homework, is what one of the experts said, one of the lawyers said to me, of the district attorney's office.
What has Larry Krasner or his office had to say about this?
Larry Krasner put out a video saying essentially that talked more about the movement and how people don't like change with this movement, and that, you know, they're going to continue to fight for it, and that this is kind of just a political doing of the Supreme Court.
Something happened today, and that is that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, in a close decision, a 4-against-us and 3-for-us decision, decided that when this office supports the defense position that someone deserves a new trial or they deserve to get out of custody, that we need to have the Attorney General's office looking over our shoulder.
We reached out personally to his office several times, and this didn't come out until about 7.5 hours after we first asked about it.
I think it's important to frame this. Larry Krasner is a district attorney who rose to power largely on the idea of righting wrongs, overturning wrongful convictions. And this decision that has been handed down, it's been handed down like this is not Republicans out of Harrisburg trying to score political points, but by a state Supreme Court that at the moment is controlled by Democrats. They are saying he needs his work checked. That is really something. Am I overstating this?
I really don't think you are. I think the everybody's kind of looking at how crazy this is and what move this is. But when it comes down to it, there's been so many cases where the courts in both in federal court and at the state court level have basically said that the district attorney's conviction integrity unit has lied to get essentially their way so that they will do exactly what they say that they're going to fight against when it comes to truth and justice. The way that this was phrased, talking about lack of candor and essentially saying they were unreliable and saying that essentially they just repeatedly misrepresented facts, failed to conduct adequate investigations, and dodged necessary evidentiary hearings. This is very serious. He's already had one of his top guys basically banned from federal court, which also involved a conviction integrity unit attorney. It's not that he's not playing by the rules is essentially what they're saying, but it's that he is lying to get his own way. And that is what is essentially what SCOPA said in this. And that is, I think, what is so startling to many people.
How do you think this affects the district attorney's office going forward?
People I spoke to don't really know how he would be able to essentially overturn this move by the Supreme Court. And so it's going to be interesting to see how Krasner essentially works with the attorney general's office and whether or not they will essentially be fair and play nice. There are still people that are incarcerated that were wrongfully convicted. And I think that they're not going to have the kind of chance that they would have had if this was not in place.
So going along with this, after this news hit a couple of days later, we had another big development involving the DA's office. This one also not good. What happened?
So, Matt, Nancy Winkelman, she was a former supervisor for the district attorney's law department. She was suspended in April for practicing law, basically in federal court. This happened months after her subordinate, Paul George, was disbarred from federal court for the same reason. The reason we found out about this week, I should mention, is because these documents were unsealed this week. So the case that kind of the centers around is a guy named Robert Wharton, who was convicted and sentenced to death back in the 80s for murdering a Mount Airy couple. So basically a panel of judges said that Winkelman misrepresented critical facts, basically review what she was supposed to review of her subordinate George in order to vacate this death sentence for Wharton. So essentially they were, what the court was saying is that they lied to the court, or knowingly or unknowingly, they did lie to the court. They recommended then that for Winkelman to be suspended, and she was. They said that Winkelman was willfully blind to and complicit in George's misrepresentations to the court, Matt.
Thank you very much, Kristen. That's KYW Crime and Justice reporter Kristen Johansson joining us. We need to take a break. We are just getting started on this edition of The Week in Philly. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to The Week in Philly. And we have talked a lot on this show about the President's House and the fight over the slavery exhibits that had been there. Now, we had a lot of movement on that front over the last week. And for more, let's bring in KYW City Hall Bureau Chief Pat Lowe. Pat, what's the story here?
The Third Circuit Court of Appeals finally issued its ruling on the city's claim that it had some say in what the National Park Service does on Independence Mall because of agreements going back 70 years. The judges ruled, it was a three-judge panel. Judge Thomas Hardiman, writing for the panel, said none of those agreements give you any authority over what happened at the President's House exhibit. They dismissed most of the city's arguments and spent a 36-page opinion explaining why their contractual rights did not apply in this situation. And so they vacated the injunction. They said the district court had erred in ordering that the exhibit be restored to its previous condition. And that clears the way for the Interior Department to replace the exhibit with new panels. This was something that they announced after the district court ruling that, in fact, they hadn't just willy-nilly taken down all the displays at the president's house. They were intending to replace them with new ones. They put the new ones online, and the judges said because they were online, they were allowed to consult them. And in the opinion, they said these new panels adequately tell the story of the nine people that Washington kept enslaved in the Washington's house, as the old one did, but provides more historic context. But whether they actually go up, the Interior Department has not said. And the 4th of July is 2 weeks away. There's not much time to mount a whole new exhibit there. There will be thousands of people on the mall in the next couple of weeks, including a joint session of Congress. And what they will take away from the president's house is anybody's guess.
So this happened on Thursday. Several days earlier, in a different lawsuit, a federal judge in Massachusetts had issued a preliminary injunction calling for the restoration of exhibits all across the country that the Trump administration had changed or was in the process of changing, and that included the president's house. How does what happened Thursday reconcile with what happened in that case?
Well, since the Philadelphia case was already in an appeals court, the Massachusetts ruling never really impacted what was going to happen here. And in fact, the federal government has already appealed that district court ruling in Massachusetts to the First Circuit Court of Appeals. So it's not clear what the final ruling there will be, but the Third Circuit marked its opinion as precedential, meaning it creates new law and lower courts have to be bound by what these appellate judges found. So it is unlikely that that Massachusetts case will change what happened in Philadelphia.
All right. Well, we'll definitely keep an eye on it. Also wanted to talk to you. Philadelphia has gotten its first taste of World Cup action. And you did a story this week because these games were predicted to be a real boon for the tourism industry. And we've started to get some early returns. Now, we should note what we will discuss is based off the first game in Philly. The second game was Friday night after we taped this segment. But from the people you talked to, what kind of impact did hotels, restaurants, what did they see from that first game last weekend?
Well, it had some impact.
When you compare it to a Sunday night this time of year, we did well, but a lot of them expected more business than what they had.
Hotels were hoping to be sold out. They had occupancy rates of 70 to 75%. Restaurants, many saw a slight bump. Some actually saw a decline in business, but there was a real sharp increase in customers in certain places with certain themes.
Fairmount had a fantastic weekend as people were walking to fan zones. I was to talk to a couple restaurants that traditionally serve soccer fans, and they had great weekends.
But it really depended on where you were as to how much of a bump you saw.
I know expectations were sky high for the impact the World Cup would have, but I am curious, given what we've heard about high ticket prices, and that's not just a Philadelphia thing, that's all over, but the tightening of U.S. immigration policy and the backlash to that tightening, is there any feeling that expectations may have been lowered a bit given all this, even if not said publicly, or were people kind of still all in that this could be as big as everybody wants it to be?
Well, people did say it publicly, actually. I think when the city was courting FIFA, they had sky-high expectations, but of course a lot happened between getting the games and hosting the games, and you named the factors that are relevant. So that by late spring, people were already realizing this was not going to be the bonanza they thought. And in fact, Tourism Economics, a consulting company, told Philadelphia tourism officials not to expect a very big turnout for all of those reasons, for the trouble with immigration, for gas prices that would keep domestic fans from traveling to the games. So, yeah, it's a bit of a disappointment. But compared to a normal midweekend in June, you know, it's been good for tourism. It's just, you know, at what price you see what the city has gone through to make it safe, to make it welcoming. That, of course, involved a lot of expense. But on the other hand, the city looks great. You'll see, like, as the Brazil game approached, yellow jerseys everywhere. The streets were full of people. There are these hospitality hubs all along the parkway. They're brightly colored kind of tent cabins. And it's not just visitors going to them. It's just created a very nice atmosphere in the city.
All right. Thank you very much, Pat. KYW City Hall Bureau Chief Pat Loeb joining us. We need to take a break. We'll have more of The Week in Philly right after this. It's The Week in Philly, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Welcome back to The Week in Philly. And this week, news broke that the teenagers that were arrested during an anti-ICE protest in Quakertown back in February had charges against them dropped and instead now will go through diversionary programs to resolve their cases. For more on this, let's bring in KYW's Vic Raghupathy. And Vic, first off, remind us what happened back in February.
Yeah, Matt. So students planned a protest against Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and it was okayed by the school. But then just before the protest, maybe the day before the protest was supposed to happen, after being scheduled and okayed with the administration, they felt that there were safety concerns. And so they withdrew their support of the protest, and they asked students not to stage their protest. A group of students decided to carry out the protest regardless. And this was 4 months ago. This was on February 20th or so. They walk out of school in the middle of the day and they're walking through the streets of Quakertown. And there are reports that they were being a little rowdy, that they're pouring into the street a little bit, or that, you know, and obviously making a lot of noise because they're protesting. And there are police officers that are monitoring them. And while they're marching, a truck pulls up and a grown adult man pops out. It turns out to be the police chief, Scott McElry. He doesn't identify himself, though, according to the students who were there. And he goes into the crowd and tries to break it up. And we're talking about, you know, 16, 17-year-old, 18-year-old kids, teens. He gets a little pushy with them and a little aggressive, and there's video that circulated on social media where he appears to put a girl in a headlock and take her down to the ground, and he apparently gets roughed up a little bit in the altercation as well. And this resulted in 5 Quakertown students being arrested.
And what were they charged with?
Most seriously, they were charged with felony aggravated assault, and there were some lesser charges that were assessed to them as well.
So now let's fast forward to now. Why were the charges dropped?
The Bucks County DA's office released a statement earlier this week saying that after reviewing all of this evidence, even though they approved these charges at one point, that after reviewing all this new evidence, including, you know, the many videos that were taken and released and circulated and were sent to the DA's office, they decided that there just wasn't enough evidence to support assault charges against these students and the other charges. So they've all been dropped.
So now, as I mentioned, all these students will head into a diversionary program. Kind of talk about what that is.
Right. So essentially, this is a way to divert from the criminal justice system. It's essentially an opportunity to do some community service, to pay some sort of restitution, to do something other than being punished through the criminal justice system, other than doing time or anything like that. That is, I guess, still a way to repent, so to speak. KYW spoke to the lawyer representing one of the 5 students, and his client is going to write an essay and also work in a karate program for her diversionary program.
They're very happy about it. She is a terrific young lady. I just can't say enough about how proud I am of my client and proud of the whole bunch of them.
given that these charges were dropped, I think the spotlight kind of turns now to the police. Will they face more scrutiny given that the charges have been dropped?
Well, so that's what the Bucks County DA's office says, is that's what their investigation is about now, is assessing those police actions and whether they were justified. There already has been a lot of citizen scrutiny, especially when you're talking about Chief Scott McElroy here. And he was placed on leave for weeks. People have been up in arms about the claim that he didn't identify himself properly and that he got physical with students. And there was at one point, maybe about a month or so ago, an independent review done by other Bucks County police chiefs. And they found in their independent investigation that there was no wrongdoing by Chief McElroy, but a lot of people took issue with that as well.
You know, it's the equivalent of having your mom be your reference for a job interview. It makes no sense.
The Bucks County DA's office says they're going to, you know, further investigate police actions during this protest. But to this point, there haven't really been any consequences for McElroy or the other officers involved, and it remains to be seen whether there will be.
All right. Thank you very much, Vic. That's KYW's Vic Raghupathy joining us. Time for a break. More of the Week in Philly coming your way right after this.
Just firecrackers almost, like, it's intense. Like, it sounded like a 4th of July in there almost.
It's hard to imagine what they were thinking as they were barricaded in rooms across the hospital.
Welcome back to the Week in Philly, and on Tuesday afternoon, a Wilmington hospital descended into chaos. Two people were shot, one killed. For all the details, let's bring in KYW's Tim Jimenez. Tim, tell us what happened.
Yeah, Matt, this was at ChristianaCare's Wilmington Hospital, a 321-bed, 622,000-square-foot facility in the heart of the biggest city in the state of Delaware. And it was about 3:30 in the afternoon on Tuesday when Wilmington police say a 23-year-old man opened fire inside the facility and shot two 19-year-old men. One of the victims ended up dying and the other survived. The gunman managed to get away. Now, police responded. The hospital was locked down. They swept the entire facility to make sure there were no threats and all the employees and patients and others were accounted for. Now, when people were seen leaving the building, they had their arms up in the air to indicate they were not a threat, a surreal situation. The lockdown lasted a few hours before police wrapped up and the hospital got the all clear.
So then an arrest was made late Tuesday night. Who's the suspect?
Wilmington police identified the suspect as John Wallace Bay. The 23-year-old is from Newcastle, but about 6 hours after the shooting in Delaware, police say they got him in North Philadelphia, Olney to be specific. According to our partners with NBC 10, Wallace Bay got away in a Toyota RAV4, and they were able to track it down using the technology they have at their disposal, and they actually saw him getting into a rideshare in Olney, and then they eventually stopped him and arrested him. He'll face murder, attempted murder, and weapons charges.
Do we have any word yet on a motive?
Well, Matt, ChristianaCare says Wallace Bay and the two victims were actually all employees at the hospital. According to NBC 10, Wallace Bay was an IT intern and was fired on the day of the shooting. Now, how that related to the two victims, Wilmington police did not go into detail, so we don't really know of the motive when it comes to that, only that police are emphasizing that this was a targeted, isolated incident.
And this had to be an incredibly difficult situation for everyone who works at the hospital or really was there in any capacity Tuesday afternoon.
Oh, for sure. You had some of the people who actually heard the gunshots inside the building. The way one of them, a hospital guide who was in the ER, described it to us, it sounded like fireworks, and he just wanted to get out of there to run for safety.
It's just intense. It's a very intense feeling. I can't really describe it. It's just you fight or flight.
A patient also recalled feeling like she was a sitting duck, and then you have all these cops in their gear going into her room to make sure everything was secure. And also, ChristianaCare's incoming president and CEO, Jennifer Schwartz, praised the hospital workers, saying, quote, "In the face of fear and uncertainty, our caregivers stayed focused on what matters most, caring for patients and supporting one another." Schwartz said that all the employees would have access to resources to help them get through such a traumatic incident.
And you mentioned the hospital getting the all clear earlier. When did it actually reopen?
Yeah, Wilmington Hospital opened, I would say, hours after the shooting happened, and police determined that the place was safe. And Christiana Care put out a statement saying the facility was safe and secure and fully operational, and there was no threat to the public.
All right. Thank you very much, Tim. That's KYW's Tim Jimenez joining us. We need to step away. We will continue on The Week in Philly right after this. We continue on The Week in Philly, and let's talk SEPTA now and bring in KYW's Mike DiNardo to do that. And Mike, the transit agency focusing on some land in Germantown. What's happening here?
Yeah, Matt, SEPTA wants ideas from developers on how a vacant lot in Germantown can be improved. That vacant lot is a 1.4-acre parcel on Chelton Avenue right next to the Germantown Regional Rail stop on the Chestnut Hill East Line.
And this is land that SEPTA already owns. They're just looking for somebody to develop it?
Exactly. Yeah. This isn't a formal request for proposals, but it is a step before that. SEPTA wants developers to submit ideas on what could go on that lot, how it can be improved. It's just a weed-strewn stretch of cracked pavement right now. Residents have said that whatever happens there, they want to keep trees around the area in any plan that SEPTA does put forth.
Does SEPTA have an idea of what they would like to see there in a perfect world?
Big picture, yes. Among the possibilities are ground floor commercial space with apartments above. Those apartments would contain an affordable housing component. SEPTA would like to take all of this information in as it develops a formal RFP, which, again, hasn't been issued yet.
Is there a reason they're doing this? Like, is this unusual? Does SEPTA own land in other areas that they've kind of farmed out to developers?
Yes, SEPTA has done this before. It's already pursuing similar projects in Conshohocken, in Ambler, and in Langhorne. It's a concept called transit-oriented development, where SEPTA is looking to build ridership by having people live near transit stops. The bus service in Germantown is heavily used, more so than the regional rail station, so it's a way to boost ridership. But it's also another revenue source from leasing SEPTA-owned land to developers.
We project that moving forward, we could get about $10 million a year in additional revenue from these types of developments.
That is revenue that comes in from outside of the fare box, Matt, and not from state and local subsidies.
And we talked last week about whether SEPTA was ready for the World Cup. As we are recording this, we've had one game in Philadelphia now in between our recording, and when people hear this, there will have been another, so keep that in mind. But after that first game, what were the early returns?
Yeah, how often do we say that it was better than expected in Philadelphia? But at least for the first match Sunday night, SEPTA says more than 19,000 fans used the Broad Street line to get to and then from the link for Sunday's match. That is a little less than initially projected, but more than the 16,000 who ride the B for Eagles games. SEPTA earlier said it could take 2 hours or more to clear everyone out after the match. SEPTA says that they accomplished that in about 1 hour with free sponsored trains leaving NRG Station every 4 to 5 minutes. There were a couple of theories around this. One is that some fans decided to walk north up to Oregon Station, maybe thinking that station would be less crowded. And that many fans didn't leave right away. They decided to hang around at maybe Stateside Live or take advantage of some of the post-game activities. In any case, Matt, SEPTA says it's keeping the same playbook for future World Cup matches.
We do know that we could get bigger crowds for some of these games coming up. We think we'll be well prepared for that. We'll continue looking at things that we might be able to do better after every game. But we think our basic playbook is in pretty good shape.
Just as an aside, if you listen to stories from other cities, it does seem like Philadelphia has kind of taken this whole thing in stride. It does not seem there have been the problems that we have seen some other cities. Philadelphia seems like they were genuinely ready for this.
I would attribute that to two things. And number one, there has been a game plan. It's been in the works for years as soon as the World Cup bid was accepted by FIFA and awarded to Philadelphia. This is a plan that's been in the works for years. And also, Philadelphia has experience with really big events like this. A visit from the Pope or national political conventions, things like that. Philadelphia has a track record, and we know the drill.
All right. Thank you very much, Mike. That's KYW's Mike DiNardo joining us. Time for another break. We will have more of this edition of The Week in Philly coming up right after this.
I think they made a big mistake, but that's kind of part of the fun is they get to learn about like our local traditions, and now they know not to do that.
Final segment for this edition of The Week in Philly, and we are waist-deep into the World Cup here in Philadelphia. We have a couple of games under our belt now, and fans from all over the world have descended on the city to root for their countries. And some fans have learned a painful lesson about, shall we say, fan protocol here in Philadelphia. For more, let's bring in KYW's Justin Udo. And Justin, the underlying lesson here is do not mess with the Rocky statue.
Your jersey should go nowhere near the Rocky statue. And although this is the World Cup and it is soccer and it has nothing to do with our home teams, a lot of people believe that curse still applies because Ecuador, they placed their jersey on the Rocky statue and they ended up losing their first game of the World Cup. So it's safe to say that fans are now thinking like, hey, just because we love Philly and Philly is loving us back, it might not be the best thing in all of our excitement to put our jersey on that statue.
Do we know who put the Ecuador jersey on Rocky?
We do not know the exact person, but you can look back at different Instagram videos and see that their fans were surrounding the Rocky statue and were really excited and happy and cheering and had a really kind of a in-the-moment sort of pep rally. So we're pretty sure it was done in good spirits with good intentions, but it's just something you can't do.
What really makes this so relevant is the fact that Ecuador did this, and in their first game, they played Ivory Coast, and they lose. Of course, Ivory Coast, this is kind of their home base in this area. They're training where the Union train. So they really did kind of cross the quote-unquote home team.
That's really right, Matt. It was funny. I was talking to a few guys the other day, and they said, you know what? If the Ivory Coast was to put their jersey on Rocky, we think they'll be fine. They've embraced us. We've embraced them. As you said, they're in Chester. Philly is kind of their playground right now. So the Ivory Coast is a makeshift Philly team. But me personally, I would encourage them not to even tempt the fates.
And this curse is truly a thing. Like, specifically, several Eagles opponents' fan bases in big games have learned that lesson the hard way. I remember the Vikings before the NFC title game back in early 2018 as the Eagles were on their way to winning the Super Bowl. The Vikings were so cocky and just got their doors absolutely blown off when the game came.
Matt, not just the Vikings. We have the Giants, the 49ers, the Commanders, even the Patriots. They lost the Super Bowl to the Eagles in that fashion. So, you know, I wouldn't risk it.
And I thought it's interesting, even state tourism officials are warning World Cup fans now. No, there was a great message that they put out.
Not just state tourism officials, was on Brazil. They're warning their delegation not to even touch the Rocky statue. They said, forget putting a jersey on it. Don't touch it. Look at it, admire it, view it, and run the steps, but do not touch the statue.
Ecuador still has work to do here. Are we convinced? Are they screwed going forward? Is this a one-game penance? How do we feel this is going to play out going forward?
Just to be safe, the Ecuador fans, they have placed one of their traditional soups and a beer at the feet of Rocky in hopes to make amends and win going forward in the World Cup.
Thank you very much, Justin. KYW's Justin Udo joining us. And that is going to do it for this edition of The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Today's episode was produced by Brian Seltzer and Sabrina Boyd-Circum. My name is Matt Leon. Thanks so much for listening and enjoy the rest of your weekend.